We'll convene this meeting of the House Resources Committee. Today is Wednesday, January 31st, 2018. I'd like to call the meeting to order. It is 2:57. We are going to maintain this meeting in this room until probably 15 or 20 minutes after the Chair of Labor and Commerce has let us indulge that prerogative. Present are Representative Parrish, Tallarico, Drummond, myself, Representative Josephson, co-chair, Representative Tarr. We have a quorum. We are joined by Recording Secretary Deborah Tillinghast and LIO moderator Ben Manley. I remind members and those in the audience to please silence your cell phones. This afternoon, we're going to commence House Bill 217 on food security. And so at this time, I'd invite the co-chair and her staff to present that bill.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thank you. Members of the committee, Representative Garen Tarr.
And I'm Diana Rhodes. I work for Representative Garen Tarr.
And what we're going to do, given what's happened with the schedule today, we had a number of individuals lined up to testify, but some of those people have had to drop off. So we have about a half hour. We're going to just try and take advantage of the time we have today for introduction and for the individuals who are part of our invited testimony. Hopefully, you will be able to get through all of the ones, at least that are physically here present, and then we'll have to regroup and figure out where, you know, when we can bring the bill back at an upcoming meeting.
And welcome, Representative Birch.
So House Bill 217 we call the Alaska Food Freedom Act. And just to give some context here about, you know, food freedom, if you've read about it or sort of heard this terminology used, there's a growing movement, and it hopes to accomplish the five things that are listed here. And what brings me to want to bring this bill forward, you know, we have heard enthusiasm from the folks working at Division of Agriculture. There's a huge amount of opportunity in the agriculture industry in Alaska. And I remember the very first day of this committee when we all went around and talked about priorities. This was something that we all shared in common, an interest in increasing food production and local food security. And so that's very consistent with the goals of this food freedom legislation that aims to increase, first of all, direct producer to consumer sales, and we'll talk about what that means in the context of farmer markets, to support entrepreneurs. And when I talk about agriculture in Alaska, I always talk about how it's really consistent with the Alaska lifestyle and why we want to live here. People want to live off the land, and we have, you know, many opportunities to do so, and this is one of them. And what we need to do is make sure there are real business opportunities to turn that into a reality. So it also creates more opportunities for small-scale producers. That's really important. We don't spend a lot of time on it in this committee, but, for example, if an individual goes to a bank and just wants to get a loan for a piece of land, you know, that's not really a possibility. So it's very difficult to start up your own farm. And so, you know, the more we can help those entrepreneurs, those farmers, as they're starting out small and then grow, the more opportunity for success they'll have. We also talk about strengthening our local food systems. We know that 95% of the food that we eat in Alaska is imported. This is a huge departure from, you know, if you look about 50 years ago when we had the folks settle the Matsu colony as part of that effort, and those folks, you know, really increased agriculture production. You know, there was a time where we produced about 50% of the food eaten in the state. You know, now it's down to 5%. So huge, huge, again, market opportunity, but also when we think about food security on a statewide level, we know that we have about 3 to 5 days worth of food in our grocery stores. And, you know, if we think about that major earthquake that just happened, a week and a half or so ago, you know, we have those constant reminders of how isolated Alaska is and how if we had a major disaster like that and we're cut off from shipping, for example, and we know this has even happened, you know, you see pictures of grocery store shelves, you know, this is, you know, happens when we have a volcanic eruption, you know, and there have been incidents like that in the last several years. You go into a grocery store after a few days and the shelves are basically bare. So strengthening our local food systems is really important part of our increasing food security and making sure we're well prepared for something like that. And then growing our local economies. We'll talk about what that translates into dollars as estimated by the Division of Agriculture. But we spend billions, literally billions of dollars every year on that 95% of food that we import from out of the state. And so if we can just keep some of those dollars in our local economies, there's real opportunity for economic growth at a time when we're all talking about diversifying our economy and what are these, you know, industries where there's a lot of opportunity for growth, and agriculture is certainly one of those, and again, consistent with the goals of food freedom.
Thank you. And we've been joined by Representatives Rauscher and Johnson.
So House Bill 217 will do four things. And in the mix-up that happened today, with the timing, what you'll see is you have two bills in front of you. House Bill 46, we already passed out of this committee last year. House Bill 217 has a couple additional things. What we plan to do is have a committee substitute that combines those so that we are just working on one piece of legislation, and that's the part that we didn't get, unfortunately, in a timely fashion today. The new part is that as the food freedom language what we hope to accomplish is defining what farmers markets are in statute. We'll talk about the growth in farmers markets. Allowing farmers to sell products through online purchasing mechanisms, and we'll talk about food hubs, and that might be something you've heard about because there are some in the Mat-Su, there are some on the Kenai Peninsula, and they're operating very successfully. And then the parts that you will remember from the bill we considered last year that passed out of this committee with no opposition, and this is what you see in House Bill 46. So that's why the two bills are on the table there. Is DNR receipt authority for the Alaska Grown logo, and then the Alaska Product Procurement Preference Statute. And this is something we've been working on for 4 years now, trying to increase the ability for Alaska farmers to sell for when there are those large contracts for institutional purchasing. So from school districts, from the Department of Corrections, any of our state departments that are spending, you know, state public dollars on food, we want to direct as many of those dollars to buying Alaska-grown food as possible. One of the things you might have heard in the food freedom is also called cottage food laws. Kind of those terms are used interchangeably. When I've looked throughout the country at other states working on this, it's really just seems like it's been a preference of what they chose. So food freedom, cottage food laws, they're basically addressing the same thing. So the defining of the farmers market, that's important when we talk about the food hub part of it. But this farm and farm products exemption, so what we are trying to accomplish here are the individuals that want to sell some of the homemade products. It has to be sold directly from the producer to the consumer, and the bill requires informed consumer choice in terms of, you know, how that was prepared or that it hasn't been inspected. And that's been typical of this type of legislation, so it's the informed consumer choice. But if you look at the number of items listed there and think about any recent trips to a farmer's market, these are the things that people are, trying to grow and sell. And so what we're trying to accomplish here with the bill, Municipality of Anchorage has drafted some regulations related to cottage foods. Other areas are talking about it, but what we have an opportunity to do here with a bill is make sure we have a consistent statewide policy so that it doesn't matter, you know, if you're a farmer in the Mat-Su and you're selling, you know, in the Mat-Su borough or in Anchorage, or if you're in the Tanana Valley, area, if you're selling in the Denali borough versus Fairbanks North Star borough, we don't want to have a situation where we have a patchwork of regulations all looking a little bit different from each other. So the opportunity to create a consistent statewide policy and then make sure that we continue to support these economic opportunities is what we hope to accomplish with this. Just to look at some of the numbers of what's happening with our farmers market sales, because there's been incredible growth and in both the number of farmers markets, and I want to say it was just about 10 years ago, there were about 13 farmers markets, and that's up closer to 40 now. So tremendous growth. I know when I first moved here in 98 was helping with the Alaska Organic Association, and that transitioned, some of the members there transitioned into working on founding the Anchorage Farmers Market. At the time, that was the only farmers market in the state that required all Alaska-grown produce. That one operates, a lot of people in Anchorage will know, out of the Cordova location on 15th Avenue. But what's been amazing to me to watch, for example, in that time, I mean, that used to be the only farmers market in Anchorage. But now there's the Spinard Farmers Market, there's the Mountain View Farmers Market, there's the Muldoon Farmers Market, there's the South Anchorage Farmers Market, the Northway Mall Farmers Market, the Sears Market, and, you know, they're all doing really well. There's such an interest in being able to know how your food is grown and know who you're buying it from, and, you know, these farmers markets are really just thriving. So, you know, here are just some of the stats. You know, 1.25 million from Fairbanks, 500,000 out of Homer, 100,000 Kodiak, and even the new one in Mountain View, $19,000. So lots of economic opportunity here in our state, and shown by those numbers. What we have here on the graphic is just more generally looking at the benefits of farmers markets and what we can accomplish. Again, the local economy part of it, preserving farmland and rural livelihoods. Representative Johnson knows better than I, with, you know, development and growth in some of the areas, sometimes it's harder to preserve farmland. And that's been something that people have been working on, for example, the Alaska Farmland Trust, largely in the valley. But that's an important issue. And so, you know, the more we can support these farmers who, you know, who are starting out and looking for this to be, you know, how they make their livelihood, the better off we'll be.
Okay. Any questions? Yes, Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I've got one of the concerns I have, and I go to the farmers market. We always get the fresh stuff and enjoy that in the summer seasonally. But I guess one of the things, particularly when you start looking at milk and things like that, is that there's a certain level of public protection that is afforded by pasteurization, for example. Mm-hmm. And I guess one of the concerns I have is, you know, is there something that we're not doing now that this will permit to happen? You know, because as you say, we do have a number of farmers markets out there, but I become a little skittish when we start talking about, you know, the public health aspects. And while I enjoy digging a carrot out of the ground and eating it as much as the next person, you know, when you get into, you know, milk pasteurization and you know, maybe questionable practices, you know, does this set aside, or how do we deal with that in this process, or maybe we don't?
Representative Birch, through the chair, if I could set the question about milk aside, because we're going to talk about that specifically, mm-hmm. just for one moment, if that'd be okay with mm-hmm. you.
Sure.
Okay. And we'll definitely come back to that, because we have to address those concerns. And so just to kind of go on just more with the theme of the food freedom and what's been happening in other states, and why it's so exciting to me. Wyoming was the first state to pass a law in 2015, and you can see a quote from the representative that sponsored that. Wyoming has had roaring success, and we continue to capitalize on those aspects. In fact, the Agriculture Committee for the state of Wyoming will spend the summer studying ways to expand on the Food Freedom Act. It was so successful. There's been bills introduced in many other states, which is good, because then we can learn from some of those conversations, and to the extent they've identified concerns, make sure to address them. I love from the Virginia Food Freedom website, you know, their quote, food freedom means more small farms, and that's something that I think is really exciting and hope that we, in fact, can support and accomplish. And here's a little more on the economic impact. We've talked a little bit when the division director was here and the deputy commissioner about the $5 Alaska Challenge. They have estimated that if all Alaskans participate in this, it could raise $188 million for our economy. And so we do have some invited testimony. And so let me go then to the question about the raw milk portion. What we plan to do at this point is pull that section out of the bill. Because we hope to, and hopefully Representative Tallarico is going to be a part of this, and others that are interested, really get a group of people together, because We've been working with the Farm Bureau on this. We've been working with DEC on this, and some of the concerns have been identified. I think some of them are achievable. So, for example, DEC has a concern about how would they contact individuals should there be some kind of, you know, illness, a situation, and they want to, you know, let people know, okay, this is a reason to be concerned. Well, you know, at this time, I think that's easy. Most people are keeping customer databases, and so I think we could, you know, easily address a concern of making sure that there has to be current phone number and email information. So should there need to be, you know, sort of a rapid response, reach out to people, you know, in the same way that, you know, you get maybe an email or a text from Fred Meyer if something, you know, has a recall. So I think we can figure that out. The Alaska Farm Bureau took a position at their fall meeting to support raw milk, but with inspection. And that's the part where we're a little bit hung up right now in terms of how we would accomplish that inspection. And so that's what I really hope will happen in the coming months, that we can get together, you know, the group of individuals that may be interested in that, you know, that economic opportunity. You know, we have just one dairy left in the state, so that's, you know, concerning in terms of, you know, are we going to see any growth there? What I'm hoping is we'll have an opportunity to bring a group of people together, talk about whether we can accomplish this in a way that's not overly burdensome for the farmers, so then they, you know, it's too costly, too cumbersome. They don't even kind of want that as an option anymore. But that then also addresses, you know, the safety concerns with customer contact and, you know, any inspection issues.
Follow up?
Yes, follow up. Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Also, as it relates to providing state municipalities more freedom to purchase more Alaska-grown produce, increasing the procurement differential from 7 to 15%. Well, I mean, they actually have, if I understand it, they have freedom to purchase. It's just that it's proposed to increase the differential that they could pay 15% more for Alaska products.
Through the chair to Representative Birch, and I apologize because we had this bill, you know, those portions that are in the other bill right now that we want to combine. We had that hearing last year, so I kind of went over that quickly. But this was an issue we started working on in 2014. We had a bill to increase the product procurement preference, and at the time, as the work was going forward on that, the conversation changed to, you know, let's put the pause button on this and let's actually do some research about what's happening. So we put in a request through the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee, and they did an audit. That took about a year and a half. So we got that, I want to say it was in the fall of 2016, maybe. Yeah, the fall of 2016, their audit was out, and I'll be sure to email a copy of that again to all committee members. And so what they did was they, you know, looked at the major contracts that the different state institutions had, you know, what looked at the price of what they were purchasing, compared that to what's available with Alaska Grown, and compared the difference in price. And what they found is that 7% is not a great enough difference, because procurement rules say that you have to buy the lowest, you know, cost item. And so just giving that flexibility that you could pay up to 7% more wasn't enough to allow for Alaska Grown purchasing. And so we're trying to give a little more flexibility in that. And it, so it doesn't mean that you spend more money necessarily. You could be spending the same $100. It means that, you know, when you're making those purchases, should you find an Alaska Grown item that you want to purchase, you'll have more flexibility on the price of that relative to the product you might get from outside. And so, you know, the hope is, and what we've been told by farmers, you're kind of in this chicken or the egg situation, because they don't want to grow more unless they know they have a customer, right? That's a money-losing proposition for them if they have nowhere to send it. And so what we're hoping, the analogy I use is, if you think of kind of like a shopping mall where you have your anchor tenants, right, the few big stores, and then you fill in around them. You know, what we're hoping is to create a situation where a farmer might have a large contract with one of these institutional purchasers that guarantees some, you know, volume, some, you know, quantity of the product that they grow, and that, you know, in doing so, that will give them the opportunity to, you know, expand what they're selling to grow their farm, because they'll know that they, you know, they're anchored by that large institutional purchase. One of the things that came out of the audit was also that the Department of Administration was going to update their RFP. so that there was specific language in the RFP that would alert people to this Alaska-grown product preference. So when a vendor responds to that call for proposals, you know, they can fill in how they might meet that. So, you know, some of the more recent ones that have come forward, the Alaska Marine Highway just had a RFP go out about a year ago. So, you know, they don't come up, you know, all of the time. But as these opportunities come forward, you know, this we would hope might expand the number of Alaska-grown products that would be a part of the proposal to that state agency.
I guess to follow up, Representative, I'm just concerned about adding a 15% surcharge to the cost of doing business. I mean, to a if we are have an already strapped, you know, Pioneer's home, mm-hmm. to tell them that you know, they can go ahead and spend 15% more for, you know, goods and services than they'd otherwise be able to. I guess I need a little more information on that, but it doesn't seem particularly reasonable to me. But thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And through the chair to Representative Birch, you know, there wouldn't be a requirement of that. It would just be they would have the flexibility. And so I don't anticipate, you know, we know the budgets are constrained. And, you know, for those individuals making those purchases, they're not going to get extra money. But what it would allow them is, you know, in their meal planning, and, you know, this is not a skill set that I have. These individuals who, you know, work for large institutions and plan out, you know, the food selection for months at a time for hundreds of individuals, you know, they have a skill that I don't have. But what it would allow them to do as they're planning that out, you know, they may make different choices about the dishes that they're going to serve, you know, based on availability of some of these Alaska-grown products. Because in addition to supporting our local businesses, we know that a lot of these, you know, they're just a fresher product. They're a healthier product in many ways. You know, just overall flavor, you know, we find is better because it's a fresher product. And so, you know, especially take an elderly population where you want to make sure they are still getting, you know, fresh foods, you know, rather than just all sort of prepared foods. You know, I would just hope that, you know, they might look to this as an opportunity and see, you know, if there were places where it could work. Like I say, there's no requirement that they would do that, but, you know, we're just looking for, you know, it just seems if these are state dollars and we can direct them to do things that better support our local economies and our farmers and improve our food security, then it's a win-win situation for everybody involved.
Okay. So with that, Representative Tarr, are you at a just so the committee knows, there are, I believe, two people online, Johanna Heron of the Division of Agriculture and Christina Carpenter of the Department of Environmental Conservation for questions. And how would you like to proceed at this point?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I believe here in the audience, we still have a representative from the Alaska State Chamber. Would love to, they've endorsed the food freedom legislation, would love to have them testify. And I know she's been waiting here personally for almost 2 hours. So
we should
if we could take her, that would be wonderful. Appreciate it. And again, I apologize about this being a little bit clunky in terms of the presentation because of the kind of irregular schedule today. Anyhow, we'll get those ducks in a row and get the new paperwork to everyone.
So, ma'am, if you'd like to come forward and put your name on the record, and we hear your testimony.
Good afternoon. Debbie Speakman. I'm the executive director of the Homer Chamber of Commerce, which is why I'm excited to be here. We have over 1,000 high tunnels in our little community. We welcome you to come down and enjoy our produce. I was excited to hear about this at our fall state conference in Sitka because we have a lot of young entrepreneurs who moved to Alaska excited to build their own business and live the Alaskan dream. And the nice thing about these bills is it makes it easier for them to do business, anything that can streamline. We also have a lot of cottage industries. And I am also, like some of you, I'm a consumer and a customer at the farmers market and also of the Kenai Peninsula Food Hub. And on the Food Hub right now, the cottage industry, so your jams and jellies and things like that, you can't purchase those online to pick up because of the restrictions currently on the books. And it's also interesting that every municipality you go to has different regulations. So making it all clean and concise and easy for these young entrepreneurs to do business, we are very in favor of. And it's also great to diversify our economy. Like I said, these young people are coming in and they're starting these businesses. and make it easier for our institutions and our municipalities to access and have the ability, if they have the budget, to purchase these local foods. It's a huge movement across the country, and it's so exciting that my little community can be on the forefront of fresh local foods getting to our communities. I'm quick and excited.
Any questions from the members? None? Okay. Yes,
Resident Park. Just briefly, again, want to thank you so much for being here in person and for the support of the State Chamber and your local chamber, and look forward to visiting with you in Homer.
Please do. Thank you.
So at this time, we are going to recess this meeting. My apologies. Brad St. Pierre, is he here?
Hello.
Yes. My apologies.
Thanks for your time.
Mr. St. Pierre, we are ready for your invited testimony.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your time, and I'll just introduce myself. My name is Brad St. Pierre. I manage the Tanana Valley Farmers Market, and I'm the Vice President of the Alaska Farmers Market Association. I'm also a farmer. I have a 5.5-acre vegetable and 110-acre hay farm outside of Fairbanks. And today I wanted to speak to the HB 217, tell a little bit about the farmers market here in Fairbanks. It has been around since the mid-1970s when a few farmers got their trucks together and began selling summer bounty to our local community. And from there it's grown to we have over 100 vendors. We own our own property and building, and literally tens or hundreds of thousands of pounds of vegetables have been sold out of this market. We have, in our Farmers Market Association, like you were hearing earlier, there's nearly 40 farmers markets now in Alaska, and we all together combined our voices to help the vendors. So farmers markets around the country, and especially here in Alaska, are incredible economic drivers. Our market this last season did $1.2 million of sales of local Alaska-grown or Alaska-made products. And if you think about that in local sales, most Alaska-grown or made vendors spend their money on Alaska-made or Alaska-grown things as well locally. So that money, instead of leaving directly after the sale, it stays here in Alaska. What the Food Freedom Act does is it aligns our values here in Alaska with producing our own food and selling it to ourselves, and that would mean that the state of Alaska is standing up with the farmers. So recently the Food Safety and Modernization Act passed the federal government and recently is being implemented, and what that means is that farming has gone from a zero federally regulated industry to a strictly federally regulated industry. And what the Food Freedom Acts around the country have done is that the states where they've passed is that the state is standing up and saying, in our state, we support direct sale to consumers, of educated consumers, of unadulterated farm products. And if you look at what is being sold at farmers markets around the state and the different rules applied to different areas, that inhibits production or the beginning of productions. So I think one of the major issues, or the most major issue facing Alaska agriculture, is the lack of new and young farmers. And the last thing new and young farmers need is to be hurdled with more hurdles to jump over so they can get to market. And with the Food Freedom Act, we will be giving them a clearer path to navigate the state regulations to get to market. And I think if you think about economic initiative with this increase of preference of from 7 to 15% for institutional or state buyers, what that does is it makes our products more attractive. If you think about, even though they would spend more money up front on those products. If it's within 15%, they would be compelled to purchase them. That money stays in Alaska, and it goes to an Alaskan company, and it goes to an Alaskan person and an Alaskan family. And then that Alaskan family, this is it's a feedback loop. You know, everybody does better when everybody does better. And the Department of Agriculture being able to, it's another piece of the bill, to commodify the Alaska Grown logo and bring in revenue to that department, which has been, like many others, struggling with the budgets. And that's another huge benefit, because the Alaska Grown program really is the advocate for farmers here in Alaska. I mean, you see these shirts everywhere, and or they provide twist ties for my farm and different promotional stickers and things like that, which, you know, as a farmer, every little thing counts. So I believe they need support. And took this bill to the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce, and with resounding support, they brought it to the state chamber. And I think the reason that the chamber, and I appreciate the representative from Homer from the chamber coming and speaking, but they realized the real economic benefit to farmers markets. If you look in Fairbanks, I can name five off the top of my head businesses that began at the farmers market that now are brick and mortar shops or restaurants in our store. We have a greenhouse and different restaurants. If you've been to Fairbanks, the Bun on the Run started at the farmers market years and years ago. So, you know, it's been the backbone, and it's, in the future, it can continue being a strong piece of the Alaska economy. And, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. St. Pierre? Yes, comment from Representative Tarr.
Just the same comment. It's so great to hear your voice again. I was able to meet him when I visited the Tanana Valley Market this summer, and the enthusiasm. I learned how enthusiastic he was that day, and I could hear it in your voice today. So thank you so much for staying online so long so that you could provide that great testimony today.
Sure, and I just did want to speak one because of the question earlier about milk, and the Farmers Market Association is supporting this bill without that piece included. So just wanted to make that clear that the bill going forward would not have that. So thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you. Now we're going to proceed to our last person today, also invited, Robbie Mixon, the local foods director, Homer Farmers Market. Robbie.
Hello. Can you hear me?
We can. Let us know your name and your affiliation, and give us your testimony.
Hi, I am Robbie Mixon. I am the director of the Homer Farmers Market, the Kenai and Anchorage Food Hub, and the Alaska Farmers Market Association. And I also came to Alaska about 9 years ago as a farm intern, and have just been really involved ever since. And I am here to give you guys some information about online farmers markets. They're also known as food hubs around the country. So they're on the rise throughout the lower 48. In 2013, there were 236 of them, and today there are 400. So in Alaska, we have three. So the Kenai and Anchorage Food Hub in Homer, it opened 2 years ago, and we serve Homer, Soldotna, Seldovia, and Anchorage, and we are looking to expand through more communities in between. And there are also food hubs in the valley, the Bogart Food Hub, and then in the southeast, the Salt and Soil Food Hub. So to let you know what a food hub is, it's basically an online farmers market. We offer growers and value-added producers a virtual stall, so they are able to post pictures of themselves, talk about their growing practices, and with products for sale every week through our online platform. So then customers go online, order food, and they're able to contact producers if they have any questions. And then they pick them up at a set designated spot, and this goes on week to week throughout the season. So, this type of online purchasing of food is, like I said, growing throughout the country. You can see it in different sectors like Amazon and Walmart. The federal SNAP program, which is essentially food stamps, they're currently piloting a program to investigate being able to use platforms like these online farmers markets for clients to be able to redeem benefits through there. So the piece that I am most invested in is allowing cottage foods for sale through these online farmers markets. Currently, I know the DEC is on, so if I mess anything up, let me know. But currently, the DEC allows the sale of cottage foods for face-to-face transactions, such as a physical farmers market. And this allows people to ask questions and make judgments about the producers and their products being sold. So these cottage foods are products that are made in a non-permitted kitchen, so it's often a home kitchen, and they come with labeling requirements like phone number, ingredients list, those kinds of things, and they are products that have a low risk of bacteria growth. So things like jams, breads, pickles, just the process of making that food eliminates or greatly reduces the chance of an infection or bacteria kind of a thing. So we are asking you guys to support this bill so that the sale of cottage foods will be extended to online farmers markets. And one big issue of this has been traceability. So, like I said, each producer has a virtual stall where customers can get more information about the products. The software that we use provides a lot of traceability, even more so than at a physical farmer's market. So we can trace what producers sold what products to who and where and when. If the bill does pass, all of our products would carry the same labeling requirements. And I'd also like to add the Food Hub model that we use, we don't ever actually own the products. We're essentially providing the virtual space for the sale of products and then taking a percentage to cover our operation costs, much like a physical farmers market would do. Another thing I'd like to point out, currently you are able to sell home-processed poultry up to 1,000 birds yearly on the Food Hub, on an online farmers market Food Hub model, but a homemade loaf of bread or jam is not allowed. As Representative Tarr mentioned earlier, many states have opened up and loosened regulations to allow more freedom, and there have been virtually no one reporting of any contaminated products. And as she mentioned, they are working on expanding and clarifying these opportunities within their state. And I'd like to add that if any issue would arise from the sale of these cottage food products, nothing in this act would preclude the state DEC from investigating any outbreaks or food-borne illnesses. With 95% of our food coming from outside, that's about $1.5 billion in sales that's spent on food outside of the state. So I would encourage everyone to be doing everything they can to support a more secure food system and empowering these small-scale producers. So by expanding cottage food regulations to include online farmers markets, it would expand community access to fresh, healthy, Alaska-grown food, give small-scale producers an opportunity to launch their business. As Brad mentioned earlier, there are quite a few businesses that get their start at places like Farmers Market and Food Hubs. If you've ever been to Homer and have been to the bagel shop, they got their start at the Farmers Market, and now they are a very successful, thriving business and provide year-round jobs to about 15 people. I also want to throw my support behind the other pieces of the bill by allowing the Commissioner of Natural Resources to charge and collect a fee for Alaska-grown trademarks. The Alaska-grown program has been invaluable to farmers markets and growers across the state. This very, very visible logo has instilled in customers a value. There's a sense of pride when people purchase things grown in their own area. So Alaska-grown is directly contributing to the success of our farmers. And I also like to support the procurement piece of this bill as well. So by creating greater food security, in order to create greater food security, the state must embody the change it wishes to see. So by purchasing more Alaska-grown products, it shows a commitment to local food producers, and healthy lifestyles, as well as encouraging younger farmers to enter a very aging agricultural field. So thanks a lot for your time. I hope you'll support House Bill 217 to create more opportunities for farmers, strengthen our food system, and to grow our local economy. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Mixon?
Mr. Chair, I just again want to thank you for staying online to testify and providing that great testimony.
And if Ms. Seitz is on the phone, I think we're going to have to contact you when this bill is heard a second time. We thank you for calling in. And with that, we will, just a quick housekeeping note, we'll be taking up House Bill 322. You have a PowerPoint and some other documents before you. And that will be on Friday. And with that, I think we will adjourn unless there's something more.
I was just going to say, Mr. Chairman, that on House Bill 217, so we'll regroup to get the new version that combines them to everybody before we bring it back up before the committee. And that way, anyone that has questions on it, we can discuss that, hopefully, with you and address any of those questions.
Representative Johnson, you have a question?
Yeah, just. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just a process question. We just heard from the producers on Monday for House Bill 288. I was wondering, do we have any plans to have them scheduled, or not them scheduled back, but do we have any plans to do anything more on the tax or the oil tax bill?
Representative Johnson, we looked at the schedule, and we scheduled this in large part today because the chamber's in town, and this was in among their top priorities for this year. And so I think we either next week or the following week, the next thing would be public testimony. And so I think we have that scheduled, and we talked about doing it in the evening, I think next week,
But not early in the week.
Next Wednesday, I think. But we'll certainly, we'll look at that schedule and get back to you, and definitely try to give, you know, ample notice so the public knows and can participate.
So we follow up. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. We haven't seen the end of it is what I guess I'm asking. That's a no, right?
Yeah. No.
Thank you.
Yes. Okay. All right. Okay. All right. We'll adjourn at 3:41. Thank you.